Welcome to episode 273 of After the Credits, your littlest hobo media spew for October. Right?
Yeah.
I'm your co-host.
October for me.
Yeah, ditto.
I'm throwing in September.
Yes. I'm your co-host, Maureen Antunes of ATCpod.ca and Quieter Thought US, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Colleen, Littlest Hobo's number one fangirl.
Dale from ATCpod.
All right.
CA?
Yep.
CA.
Yep. I just renewed it for another 2 years. Guys, we're committed.
Woohoo!
Yeah, we missed last month. Things happened. Life happened. Festivals happened. But we're back, so we got lots of stuff to talk about. Where do we want to start and who wants to go first?
I can start. Movies, I have one.
Oh, let's do it. Did you watch this on the plane?
No. Okay. I only watched like one episode of Westworld, and I started in like season two and it got really confusing, so I turned it off. So that doesn't count.
She says,
I don't know when this was. It's been so long since I'm on, and it's the only movie I can remember because it stuck in my head really well. It is the movie Bad Words. It was starring Jason Bateman.
Oh, is that the one about the spelling bee?
Yes. Okay. Yes. And it's one of the rare turns where Jason Bateman truly is a horrible human being. And God, I adore him when he does that. He is the adorable Jason Bateman, but
as an
being
asshole.
A complete and utter asshole. Oh, it's so good. If you want to watch a not so feel good film about a competitive children's spelling bee being invaded by a full grown adult,
this is the movie for you.
This is it. Yeah.
Mr. Dale, what you got?
Okay. I did drop some stuff off, some kind of garbagey things, but okay. Ready or Not. Which was a hell of a lot of fun. This is the one where the family is stalking the new bride.
Oh, yes.
Kill her. Yes.
Yes.
Because reasons.
It's like a tradition, a family tradition or something.
It's a family tradition that the you have to play a game, and one of the games is quite deadly. it was a lot of fun. It had a few kind of... cringy moments just because, you know, with nails and a few other things, but it was a lot of fun, and it's a social commentary. I saw Fast Color after you were talking about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice little quiet, interesting movie. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. It's about superpowers basically, but in a very non-superhero-y kind of way. Fuck you all, the Uwe Boll story.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
Documentary about Uwe Boll.
It was really interesting. There's also a article, a Vice article on the thing, which was actually as interesting as the documentary.
Oh, okay.
You might even be able to get away with just reading the article, but definitely it is fascinating seeing this guy work, and it's from a point of view, the guy shooting the documentary wasn't out to do a hatchet job. He was actually a bit of a fan. So I really enjoyed it. It was like a fascinating insight into the whole thing.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Of course I saw a documentary about Uwe Boll.
How is it I haven't seen this?
You haven't mentioned it though.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought maybe
you must have seen it a while ago. Or maybe in a cluster of...
Yes. I did see it, I think, I want to say earlier this year as part of some festival.
Anyway, so Uwe Boll, for many of you who haven't heard of him, has been categorized as the worst filmmaker in the world, which is not true.
No.
Agreed.
But he is very much a character, like when he challenged what's-his-name to a boxing match.
Yeah.
And...
Danny Bonaducci?
Just a huge... No, another... Was it Cameron? Someone, some other director dissed him. So the guy has an interesting reputation. So it was, like I said, it was fun watching.
And he's not like a legit foodie.
Yeah.
Like his restaurant is legitimately...
I work a block away from his restaurant. Yeah.
I've been trying. I'm still trying to get there.
I've got to yell at him. That was my claim to fame. I got to yell at Uwe Boll, and he complied. So I beat him. Yes.
Justice League versus the Fatal Five, which is an animated movie. It was okay. Anna, which is the Luc Besson.
Okay, so I saw a trailer for this yesterday, and I'm like reminded that I need to see this movie.
Okay.
Is it good?
He keeps remaking La Femme Nikita with different...
Doesn't matter. As long as it's well done, it doesn't matter.
It isn't worth dropping everything for. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't...
It
wasn't a home run. Dark Phoenix, the material didn't really come together for me. And I find Sophie Turner's performances to be kind of hit and miss anyway. Yeah. Like I don't know where she'll go, because certainly there's been a lot of young actors that have taken a while to grow into their... like Keanu Reeves didn't have the range when he started. You can pick a whole bunch of other... Kristen Stewart, I think. I think I put her into that boat. Like, she has her good and her bad performances.
Yeah, she certainly has charisma. She just needs to find the right material and maybe polish a little bit more.
She didn't do it for me, but then none of the actors, like, the material just was not coalescing for me. So it wasn't the actor's fault particularly. Yeah. I guess what I'm saying is that sometimes a movie can be saved because the performances are just so good.
This is not that movie.
This is not that movie. Oh man, my friend Ian finds stuff.
The
Meteor Man from 1993.
Colleen's
Black Cook superhero movie.
I've seen this.
Holy crap. If you want to see, this was just kind of the epitome of storytelling of this type in the 90s for me, late 80s, early 90s. Boy, is it wearing stuff on its sleeve. There was a lot of people of color involved in the production. I forget the credits. They were trying really hard to address the issues that were really only starting to address now, and they couldn't hit them directly. So it really wore its heart on the sleeve. Like, I kind of felt a little bit sorry for them a little bit.
They may have been ahead of their time.
Oh, it was so cheesy.
Yes.
Spider-Man Far From Home,
which still haven't seen. Oh my god.
Kind of, for me, it worked. About, I mean, it was Tom Holland. This is one of the movies, actually, for me, the material was as muddied as I think Dark Phoenix, but Tom Holland is just such a presence on screen,
and Jake Gyllenhaal,
and the supporting actors. Well, that's it, the villain, right? Like, your superhero movies are only as good as the villain. And Gyllenhaal, cold, stone cold, like, psychopathic asshole.
He's great, always.
So for this one, I enjoyed it a bit more, and it was because the performances were just that much better. And I finally saw Platoon, which I hadn't seen before.
Wow.
Yeah, and
that's kind of for a war guy, that's kind of a big
it was
for
well
you.
And my friend Ian was like, Dale, what?
So
he pulled into his collection, and we fixed that. And man, Oliver Stone has sure come downhill from when he was
top
at
of his
height.
Yeah.
And we also there was the director's commentary, which we didn't listen to, but the military advisor
commentary
we listened to. It was hit and miss. Like, there was a lot of stuff in there that was putting me to sleep, but there was also a whole lot of tidbits about the war and about the filmmaking. Like, I don't know if they could make that movie the same way today. Like, literally took all the actors that were in the platoon, took them to the Philippines for 2 weeks and did a little mini boot camp.
Oh, God.
Now, they were all up and coming, right? But it's like Willem Dafoe and, his name was right. Anyway.
Sheen. Charlie Sheen.
Tom Berenger.
Yeah.
There was just a whole bunch of people there that were like, we're going to go big. I don't think they were especially big then. they put them through boot camp, like completely isolated in the Philippines. They're humping around the full. This military advisor was, I wanted them to like look like it was under load. Those backpacks were really loaded with 60 pounds of stuff.
Wow.
In the Philippine heat.
Yeah.
Holy shit, stuff like that was like really, really interesting. They wanted the body bags to look real, and like the military advisor was like, that doesn't look real. And he actually got in one of the body bags. Like, he didn't want to have this, just like, listen, everyone else is busy. Put me in the bag. We need this to look like a real body.
Holy shit.
So stuff like that was really interesting. And yeah, it's like, I'm glad I seen it finally.
Nice.
And that's it for my movies.
I got lots. I'll try. I left a bunch out.
Well, and I just came from the fest, man.
Well, I'm not going to talk about the festival.
Okay.
So there's been enough.
See
of
the
that.
Memos.
What yeah. Did, there we did
dispatches.
We did two shows, which covers a lot of the stuff, and I didn't see quite as many movies as I wanted to, though. I got to see some of the big ones, which I was really happy about. So I'll just talk about some of the other stuff that I've seen recently. So I finally broke down and watched the Robin Hood from like last year.
Oh.
The action-packed Shish Kumba. Okay, so it was pretty terrible. It wasn't quite as terrible as I thought it would be. It was still pretty bad. I still wouldn't recommend it, but whatever. It's there, and it's not as bad as I thought it was. So, you know, there's that. I finally watched Destination Wedding with Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves. So this is like this. It's, I think, I want to say it's on Amazon Prime. I'm not 100% sure now off the top of my head. But it's... Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves are these two very acerbic people that meet at the airport on their way to a wedding, and it turns out they're going to the same destination wedding, and they end up sitting at the back of this tiny little plane on their way to this wedding, and they find out they're going to the same wedding. And she is the ex-girlfriend of the groom, and he is the brother of the groom, so they know of each other in passing. And it's just these two acerbic people that are still really shitty to each other throughout the entire weekend, but they keep bumping into each other, so they end up spending time together. It's not great. It's a little bit, like, it's very, very talky, and, like, nothing happens. But seeing Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves together is super charming, and they're so good together. It's worth watching just for that. So if you're into either of them, highly recommend it.
Nice.
I dragged Dan to see Hustlers. Like, I legit said to Dan, they're saying it's like a Scorsese movie, but with strippers. We got to go see this. And he's like, okay, fine. So we went to see this. He was a little squirmy because it's, you know, there's strippers and there's legit stripping. It's great. I don't think it's amazing, but I certainly really enjoyed it. And J-Lo is like a legit movie star, people. Like, she is the real deal. Just give her everything. Some of the acting is really, really flat. And the woman that's in it, whose name I cannot remember now, that's on like Fresh Off the Boat, and she was in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Chen?
Yeah. Chen? She's really flat. Like, her range is very, very limited. I don't think she's a really great actress, but she certainly has like something. Like, there is something, some charisma to her, but she just comes across as, like, I don't know. There's just something kind of lacking. But it's J-Lo all the way. She makes this movie. She's great, great, great. And it's a lot of fun to watch. I dragged my ass to Ad Astra. I actually saw it with Val on my birthday. This is the James Gray, Brad Pitt, Tommy Lee Jones movie in space.
Trailer did nothing for me.
I love this movie.
Really?
This is, for me, this is the best movie I've seen all year.
Wow.
And I went to the festival and I saw Parasite. Parasite is my second favorite movie of the year. This is my favorite movie of the year. It's got everything I want from a movie. It's enormous. It's about space. Brad Pitt's amazing. The visuals are stunning. The soundtrack is great. The story is really interesting. So basically, the basic concept is that Tommy Lee Jones plays Brad Pitt's father. He was like this famed astronaut that they sent on this mission. He's been like lost in space since Brad Pitt was a teenager or something. And now he's an astronaut in his own right. And the government thinks that his father might still be alive on the edge of space, and they need to send somebody to go and do something with his dad, and they figure he's the best guy for the job. So it kind of spans like a couple of years as he's making this trip to the edge of space, and he has a couple of pit stops along the way. There is an amazing, like, it sounds ridiculous. There is a chase sequence on the moon with laser guns and everything. And it sounds like the dumbest thing ever when you say it out loud. It's fucking spectacular. It's so good. I say see it on the biggest screen possible at this point. I don't know if it's playing anywhere. My favorite movie of the year. So good. James Gray's never been better. Brad Pitt's never been better. Tommy Lee Jones has not aged well, but he's still fucking amazing. He's Tommy Lee Jones. Mm-hmm. Really good. I can't say enough good things about this movie. Country Rose, about a British woman, sort of like down on her luck, gets out of prison, is determined that she's going to become a country music star, but she's from like Ireland in the middle of nowhere. It's so charming, really great. I think her name is Rose Leslie, is amazing. It's just a lot of fun, and the music is really, really good. Really, really good. If you're at all interested in country music, it's totally great.
I've liked Rose Leslie since that immortal line, "You know nothing, Jon Snow."
Yeah. Okay. So it's not Rose Leslie. Oh, that's okay. Not what I'm thinking about. It's another woman.
Okay.
For some reason, I had Rose Leslie in my mind. I don't know why, but she's also really good. The movie is great. Worth seeing. In the Shadow of the Moon, this is the noir Netflix movie with Boyd Holbrook about a woman that keeps coming back in time every like 7 years or something, and people keep dying. They made a huge deal of it when it dropped on Netflix a couple of weeks back.
I didn't even hear about this.
Okay. It's a really interesting concept. It's super well made. Boyd Holbrook is really, really good in it. The movie doesn't quite live up to par. I thought it was okay. Like, I wish I liked it more because the concept is really, really good, but it never quite, like, lands it. But it's interesting, and it's on Netflix, so it's free. So, hey, if you have, like, an hour and a half to kill, I think it's worth the time. Brink of Democracy. This is another Netflix title. It's a documentary about Brazil and basically the collapse in Brazil. It's amazing. It's like 2 hours long. Like, even if you know nothing about the politics, it's about this young woman who, like, her parents, her family has connections to the system, like from both like the political side and the activist side. It's super personal and really, really, really interesting. And it gives you a really interesting insight to what's going on in South America. And it's a really fantastic documentary. I highly, highly recommend it. El Camino, the Breaking Bad movie with Aaron Paul. Of course, I was going to watch the freaking Breaking Bad movie.
That's another one I heard described as didn't really need to be made.
Yeah, it really didn't. It's written and directed by Vince Gilligan, who I really like, and I'm glad that he's finally like stepping behind the camera, because I don't think he may have directed some random episodes of Breaking Bad, but it was never really like he was known as the creator and the writer. It picks up like immediately after the events of the finale of Breaking Bad. So it's a bit weird because it's now been like 6 years or something. So everybody still looks kind of the same, but not really. So it's a little bit awkward in that respect. I felt like maybe I needed to rewatch the last season of Breaking Bad to really like get all the minutiae in the movie, but it was still fine. Like, Dan and I enjoyed it. It was great. Aaron Paul, really, this is Aaron Paul's role. Like, he could make Pinkman movies until the end of time, and it would probably be the best thing he could do with his career.
Nice.
No offense, but it is what it is. Dan and I took our asses to the Park Theater. Yes, we drove for an hour on a Saturday to go watch The Joker or Joker in 70 mil because I'm like, we're going to do this. I was determined to see this thing on film. Like, okay, it's one of the few theaters in the world that's showing it. Let's go. So we did. The movie I thought was great. I mean, it looks amazing.
One of my coworkers loves it.
I mean, I have problems. Not so much with the subject matter, though, you know, that's problematic in its own way. But then I think it's because of the sort of the current times. I thought it was really well made. I think it's a really like good movie. I have more issues with Todd Phillips than anything else. I think he's kind of a dickwad, and I think he needs to stop talking. Just saying. But like, technically the movie is, I thought, was really amazing. And we're really glad we made the trip to see it like on film, because it looked like amazing. And I think Bill was the one that said some movies like don't the patina of glossy is great for most stuff, but some things you kind of want some grittiness. And I mean, it looked amazing. If you were to tell me that was film and this is digital, I probably couldn't tell you most of the time. But I think in this case, it's pretty obvious that you saw it on film. And we loved it. We really, really enjoyed it. And then I watched The Laundromat on Netflix. Just dropped. Steven Soderbergh's movie about the Panama Papers with Antonio Banderas, Gary Oldman, and oh my God, multiple Academy Award winning. What is her name? Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
It's a mess. It is a mess of a movie.
Oh yeah?
Oh yeah. It is such a goddamn mess.
The lawyers that it's based on are still trying to sue it into oblivion.
It's okay. So it's a goddamn mess, but it's such a fun mess to watch. But I mean, it really is a messy, messy movie that,
all right.
It has a lot of problems, but
it's just, on my list kind of thing on Netflix.
You know, I thought it was total, like Dan fell asleep. He just was not interested. I thought, you know, for what it is, you really could not have done any better than Steven Soderbergh did. And it's just, it's so joyous in its ridiculousness. It's worth watching it just for that.
Excellent.
It's like super colorful, super bright. Meryl Streep is amazing, and she puts on this crazy ass costume halfway through, and I was like, "What the hell just happened?" It's just great. And then finally, In the Tall Grass, another Netflix title. This is Vincenzo Natali's movie about based on the Stephen King, Joe Hill novella about some people that get stuck in this tall grass. It's weird. It's really weird. It's a Stephen King thing. It's just strange. It's really, really well made. I recommend you watch it. It's really great.
All right.
And it's not even like it's a horror movie, but it's not like super scary. It's just a bit weird, but it's really like technically apt, and Natalie knows how to make intensity work. And I think it nails it. Nice. And that's it. I got no more movies.
All right. TV, Netflix kind of things. I have three. Frankie Drake Mysteries are back on air. This is season 3. Female detective in the 20s, basically solving crimes.
Woohoo!
Yeah, Murdoch Mysteries also. except for this is season whatever high number you want to guess. Just
12.
Yeah.
No, higher.
Really?
I think it's probably around 15, 16 or something now.
Holy
it's fucking
smokes.
Ridiculous. You could say it's like 22 and I go, yeah, okay.
Is
I
that
believe
the CBC
you.
One too?
I don't know if it is CBC now. At one point, I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah. And The Good Place, season
yes.
3 finally dropped.
Yes.
I've only gotten about 3 episodes in before stuff happened, and then I went exploring the world. But yeah, it not disappointing, really.
Yeah. Yep, I'm enjoying the hell out of it. Murdoch Mysteries, season 13.
13, okay. I thought it was a higher number. I would have guessed, like, if you had told me it's like 22, I'd be like yeah, yep. Okay, I
sure.
Believe you.
It's been on forever.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Mr. Dale, what you got?
Oh, okay. Yeah, Good Place. I'm, like, so thrilled to see that back. You're not really behind, actually, because they're only doing an episode at a...
Oh, is that it?
Yeah,
okay.
They're releasing it weekly.
That's why I didn't binge it all in one day then.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I think they're, as of our taping, about episode 4.
Oh, okay.
I have an apology for everyone for the last media spew because I had a total brain fart. I mixed up Mindhunters with the Ted Kaczynski Unabomber one.
Oh yeah, that was on like TNT. No,
it was Netflix as well.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh. So yeah, I shit all over Mindhunter, and I meant to shit all over Unabomber. So a friend of mine corrected me. Well, like he basically was like, "Oh yeah, Mindhunter," and I'm like, "Oh blah blah blah," and he's like, "What the hell are you talking about?" Like, and then I looked it up and went, oh, sorry.
So have you watched any Mindhunter? Now
yeah.
You need to solve the problem.
No. I had watched season 1 and I enjoyed Mindhunter season 1.
And somehow I got it confused. I you know.
That's Mindhunter, Unabomber. Yeah, I can
so,
see it.
Yeah, anyway. I'm not going to try and analyze my brain. It's too quirky. Watched season two and enjoyed it. Anyway, bottom line. So, yes,
it's really good.
Underline your enthusiasm from the last show when I...
Yes, okay.
Anyway, Hyperdrive, which is kind of a Super Mario Kart meets Tokyo Drift meets Grand Tour meets Gladiator.
Best description ever.
It is,
I love it.
Crazy. It's a Netflix. It is a show where they take drifters, professional drifters, and they create a course at this industrial site that looks like a Super Mario Kart course. There's things that they need to do, like hit targets. There's this big frickin' bridge balancing thing. There's water hazards.
Are there any banana peels? That's all that I
No hate. Banana peels or turtle shells.
The banana peels are the worst.
Yeah, it's kind of a single one person at a time. I swear to God, like whoever is producing this thing is at the top of their frickin' game, because the casting, like the drivers are all really interesting. The way that they pace the show and the way that they edit the show. Like, I'm not generally into car shows. I was totally sucked into the whole spectacle of this thing. Like it isn't just a straight up, we're going to show you, I think they have 12 people a show. We're going to show you 12 people racing. Like, they show you kind of the best, and they do snippets from the middling, and then they show you the worst, and the worst are pretty damn funny. And then they eliminate some people and blah, blah, blah. And it's like they go on to the final round. And if I just don't know how they could have staged it, because it feels like it could have been written. Like, the storytelling is so good, it feels like it could be written. There is some like legitimate drama in this thing. And the thing that I think I like the most, like, the announcers are there. They were kind of annoying because they're all like, this driver, he's really showing the field like he's the one to be beat, and he's going to put the smack down on. And then they cut to, because the audience, they taped it at night, because it does look, I mean, it really looks like a video game course. The crowd is basically the other drivers watching this, and they're all rooting for each other. I mean, yeah. The ones that are about to be eliminated, you could see, like, they're not so enthusiastic.
But everybody
but
else.
But they are all, and some of them are real characters, and they're all rooting for each other and having a good time, and you just see... It isn't that kind of like, oh, the camera's on me, I better act polite. Like, people are just reacting, and you can tell that it was just an honor. Like, something goes wrong, and you just see them go like, oh, shit. So I enjoyed the hell out of this. I actually came really close to binging it in one day, but I watched it in a week. And I'm not into car shows, so there you go. That's... Wow, I talked for a while. Sorry. But yeah, if you are at all into, if that sounds interesting, check it out. I don't think you'll be disappointed.
Nice.
Jet, which was...
Oh, yeah.
I can never say... Could you say her name, please?
Carla Gugino.
Thank you.
I don't even know if that's how you pronounce it, but that's how I pronounce it.
I think that's how you pronounce it, actually. That ended. I don't know if it's been renewed. I hope so, because it ended on a cliffhanger, the bastards. I have kind of mixed feelings about it. I mean, I enjoyed it more than I didn't. Mm-hmm. There was kind of aspects that maybe, I don't know, didn't feel like they kind of felt unnecessarily dark. But
yeah, I tried to watch one episode, and I say try because I started it because on your recommendation, I thought, okay, I'm going to give this one a go. And I started watching it, and then something happened and I stepped away, and I mean to go back to finish it, and I haven't yet because I haven't had time, but it's on my watch list.
So wait until season two.
Okay.
Because cliffhanger, unless you don't mind cliffhangers.
Yeah, I'm usually okay with them.
Yeah, like I said, overall I enjoyed it. It's really dark. I think I'm not usually into shows that are kind of that dark, but it had enough other interesting things
going for it.
Yeah. Good Witch ended. I wasn't quite as enthusiastic about this season as I was about past.
I didn't realize. It's been renewed for the next season. It's one of Hallmark's top rated shows.
Oh, wow. So
there you go. Interestingly, when I was at my folks for Thanksgiving, their taste in TV is different from mine. I watched a few other kind of mainstream shows and stuff, and so bad. So very bad. And it got me thinking, like, I know some of the stuff I watch is kind of bad. So is it just a matter of, like, this bad fits my personality better than that bad?
So I'm curious, what do your parents watch that you would say is bad? I'm just curious what, like, is popular that people are watching that.
I was at Tom Selleck, Boston.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got that reaction.
Well, I don't
Royal
know.
It's Blue just, or something?
Yeah.
They're just, it's just
Royal
not my,
Bloods.
Yeah, it's just not my type of thing.
Blue Blood.
Blue Blood.
Blue Blood.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it was so saccharine on the frickin' nose.
Yeah.
You know the show that I say you know, but not knowing if you actually know, that show about the guy that's a police officer whose partner is a dog? I can't remember what it's called now.
We're not Turner and Hooch, are we?
No, it's like, it's new. It's a newer show.
Oh, I remember. I don't.
Yeah, I don't know what it's called. I
remember hearing about
but
it.
But the only reason that this comes to mind is I saw a promo somewhere, and I wish I could remember where, for a German show that's exactly the same. Oh, no. And I think, if I'm not, I might be guessing, but I think that the American version is based on a German TV show.
Probably.
Quality.
Quality.
Well, they finish ripping off everything from
pretty
BBC,
much, so
why not move on?
Well, speaking of BBC.
Schitt's Creek? I don't know.
Was I'm that guessing. Ripped off? No, that was a purely Canadian play.
Very much a Canadian.
It's a purely Canadian.
Yeah.
But it's now like a big thing.
Oh, it
US,
is a big thing,
right?
In the US. Yeah, yeah. Right when they're ending the series.
Exactly.
It's like crazy.
What?
I know.
But speaking of BBC, I watched a couple episodes of Fleabag with Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Which I still haven't seen.
Holy shit.
That's what everybody says. I need to watch this show now.
Wow. Some of the scenes are like truly so awkward. I'm squeamish. The humor is amazing. This woman's comedic timing and sense of pace is absolutely phenomenal. Like I'm in awe of how she can take just a normal moment.
Yeah.
And make it funny and interesting. But holy crap, she goes to the awkward, like, I actually fast forward in a few places because I can't take the tension.
I saw her on SNL and I thought, wow, you're really funny. We're definitely going to have to watch this show.
She's a talent. She really is. Yeah. Carnival Row. I don't know if you...
Is that the Amazon one?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it the one with Orlando Bloom, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So is it any good? Basically what I've heard is it's not good, but it has some interesting things.
Exactly.
To say.
It wasn't great. I watched it to the end because there was enough kind of interesting things going on. And thank God they didn't focus on any one character too much. I mean, it's definitely about a core set of characters, but there was some interesting turning points in there for me. And it's definitely, I'm glad they made the attempt. Like, it is definitely a social commentary borrowing from the Irish immigration into London in Victoria times, but with some contemporary kinds of themes. And I enjoyed the way that they kind of alluded to that in allegory. It's kind of some of the best things that fantasy can be good for. But yeah, it was a mess. It really was a mess. So I can understand why people got turned off of it. There was enough to keep me going. Stumptown.
Oh yeah. Okay. This is the new Colby Smulders.
Yes.
Okay, the fact that
she finally got a good vehicle. Like I'm enjoying it. It is regular television. So it's got all of those kinds of problems going for it, but nevertheless, apparently it's based on an independent comic. I just found that out. I'm enjoying the hell out of it. There's some moments.
She's super charming. She deserves to have something that is hers.
And she's, her character is kind of a bit of a messed up asshole, but a charming one with a good heart. And it's fun seeing that on screen.
It's a really good title because it's the only reason I remember it.
Yeah.
Is because the title is so...
Oh, and definitely filmed in Portland.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about The Good Place. The one thing about The Good Place, did you see the, I think it was Instagram thing of Kirsten Bell doing the Law and Order SUV thing?
Nope. No.
She's wearing, you know, her character, yeah, Eleanor Shostrop, is kind of Florida white trash or, yeah, something. She's wearing a very put together suit reminiscent of Mariska.
Oh, yes.
In SUV, and she does an SUV thing. Like, the, nice, only thing missing is the Law and Order. Dun, dun.
Nice.
And it is, I laughed. I saw it blow up on Twitter, so that's the only reason I know about that. And the last one is Emergence.
Oh, this is, yes. Wait, do I know what this is? Is this the one about the police officer and the young girl with powers?
Yep.
Okay.
That's the one.
How do I know all this shit? Oh, you're doing good, the commercials.
You're doing good summaries. It was interesting until the mystery started getting solved. The reason I was watching it is because I really like the lead actress.
Yes.
She was from Fargo.
Yes.
I forget her name.
Yeah, which is the only reason that I kind of went, ooh.
Yeah, that's really the only. And it's got some good points, but it's, yeah, I'm not sure how much longer now that I'm starting to see the mysteries. We'll see where the story goes. And that's my TV.
I just remembered one other one that I've only seen three episodes. I don't even know if there's more than three, but it's on Adult Swim. It's called The Greatest Event in Television History. And they're like about 15 minutes long. And basically, they're reenacting classic TV show openings.
Oh, God.
It's pretty good.
How have I not seen this? We watched Adult Swim a lot.
It's super funny. The best one, though, is a recreation of Bosom Buddies. And the character Kip is played by Paul Rudd.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
It's so good. Anyways, I just remembered that and wanted to get in there.
Dan watches a lot of Adult Swim, so I watch a lot of Adult Swim because of it.
Yeah.
And there are shows on that channel that I just do not understand.
Oh, same here.
I just don't get it.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to warm up a little bit to Rick and Morty. I still don't get it.
You know what? I really don't get it. I had a problem with Rick and Morty because I didn't have Adult Swim. So I would get these clips. People would show me a Pickle Rick on my phone, and I'm like going, I don't like this. Go away. Leave me alone. I don't want to watch it. I got Adult Swim, and I watched it, and Pickle Rick is not a good example of how good that show can be when it's on top. Like, there is some episodes that are, like, meta upon meta upon meta. Yeah, I'm like, wait a second, hold on.
It's not for me, man. Yeah. It's too involved for me.
The saddest thing about Rick and Morty is it's supposed to be a cautionary tale, and people are taking it as a... example tale, whatever the word is.
It's terrible. It's terrible. I love it, but it's terrible.
He's terrible. Yeah, yeah. It's supposed to be like, look how shitty this is. Don't be this way.
Yeah.
But, oh, did I say Titans? I'm also watching Titans.
Nice.
DC's Teen Titan.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
One. This season is kind of, they have too many characters. They're not telling story. They just seem to be introducing
more characters.
Or something. I mean, we're getting a little bit of story, but it's just like, come on, guys. There's smarter ways to bring in.
Yeah.
Like, I'll say this about the CW and the Arrowverse. They were much better, not perfect, much better about bringing in this huge cast of characters and doing spinoffs. And
The one thing I forgot to say about the greatest event in TV history was it's narrated by the host, Jeff Probst from Survivor fame.
No.
So he's in like a tuxedo walking down this, like, all right, it's coming up in a few minutes. But before then, we're going to look at the deep dive into the acting techniques of Paul Rudd as Kip. And he's like, he has like the weather chart
for
the weather when they shot the opening in it's good.
Okay, that's funny. Yeah.
Hunt that down.
I have a little bit of TV, all really old, because I haven't watched anything in a month. But Years and Years, which is a BBC show that spans, I want to say, like 12 years, maybe longer. It kind of starts, it's been a while since I've seen it. It starts a few years ago, and it kind of covers like three or four election campaigns in the UK. Emma Thompson plays this crazy woman that's like this super right-wing, totally like insane, wannabe politician, and it kind of follows her career as she becomes prime minister, but it actually follows her career and a bunch of other people and how changing technology affects us all and how that feeds into politics. It's really, really, really good. There's only 6 episodes, so it follows a family of like Rory Kinnear and his wife and his brother, and it kind of and his mother, and it follows them and how, like, in the shifting political waters, how that affects, like, regular everyday people. It's really, really good. It tackles a lot of things that are sort of up and coming, like gig economies, financial breakdowns, the rise of the political right and fascism and immigration and everything. It's a little bit funny. It's a little bit dark. It's really, really good. Emma Thompson is amazing as this crazy, crazy, crazy politician that anybody can kind of look at and go, yeah, okay, I see that.
What's this called again?
It's called Years and Years.
Years and Years.
And every episode begins with like a New Year's and flashing forward a few years. So you kind of see how this sort of affects people in the long term. Really, really, really good. And it's created by Russell T. Davies, who did Doctor Who and Torchwood. So, solid. We watched The Boys. Really good.
Excellent.
I really, really enjoyed it. Really, not much else to say. Just watch it already. It's really great. Yeah. It gets dark, man. Really, really dark. The Act, Patricia Arquette and Joey King. It's, I think it's Showtime. I don't remember now, but it's based on the real story of this woman and her daughter. It's a Munchausen by proxy. Right. So the woman, the mother basically thinks that her daughter is sick and she's been treating. The kicker here is that the daughter knows she's not sick and she starts acting out, but without her mother knowing. It's really fucked up. Like, I think it's executive produced by Ryan Murphy, so that kind of gives you an idea of what kind of darkness you're dealing with here. But Patricia Arquette and Joey King are really, really good. Like, really, really, really good. And it's so twisted. So, so, so twisted. And it's based on a true story. Like, these people actually exist. And the daughter is actually still alive and in prison somewhere. It's worth checking out. It's very dark. And I watched basically the entire season of Pearson, which is the spinoff from Suits. Help me with her name. I know you know her name. From
Gina Torres.
No. Yes, Gina Torres.
Yeah. I tried watching Pearson.
I thought it was okay. It is as mainstream TV as you get. I didn't
realize the character was a spinoff when I was watching it. I'm a Gina Torres fan.
So she was on Suits.
Yeah.
And Suits is basically over and she left like last season. Oh, okay. For this
I watched, I think, about the first 4.
Oh, yeah.
Just as the one guy was getting outed as being an imposter.
Yeah. So I think Suits did 8 or 9 seasons. I don't even know what, I think it's 9. And the show is now over. I still have like the last couple of episodes to go. But in the last season, they ousted Gina Torres's character and she kind of like went off.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why she left was because they'd given her a new show where she's kind of nice. Like the central character. Yeah, that's why the spinoff is very, very loose.
The topic of the spinoff wasn't the kind of show I was interested in seeing.
No.
It wasn't because it was bad.
No, it's fine. I mean, it is what it is. It's a procedural sort of. It's more of a drama about the city, Boston City Hall and the shady business
corruption
that happens there.
And, yeah.
Exactly. Gina Torres is really great. And actually, it's not bad for, you know, it. I like it the same reason I like Suits. It's not as funny as Suits, but it's just like, you know, TV I can watch and not need to super concentrate on.
Right.
And that's all I got.
All right. Books. Since I've basically exhausted all Lee and Preston and Child books.
Should we have a moment of silence?
Yes, we should.
Well, no, they're going to make more. But
I know,
they
but
don't,
let's have a moment.
A moment of
I
silence.
Read let's, faster than they can publish.
Let's have a moment of silence for Preston Child. Okay.
All right. So I found someone else to replace him, which is almost as goofy. I've mentioned 1 or 2 books before because I've read in the past, but Steve Barry has this series of books with this character called Cotton Malone, who is a Navy pilot who turned to the JAG Corps and then joined a like secret government sort of spook sort of group called the Malegen, I don't know. And then he was retired now and is a used bookseller kind of thing in Denmark, but he keeps on getting roped into these special ops kind of thing.
As you do.
Yes. As you do.
So lately I've read like the Alexandria Link, where to save someone he knows, he ends up discovering where the secret Alexander Library now lays, because they smuggled out a lot of the books before it burnt. So there's, yeah. So that's one book. Another one, The Venetian Betrayal, where it's all about like a central federation of Asian countries and this female leader of it who's obsessed with Alexander the Great. So they have to discover the lost tomb of Alexander the Great to find the...
How are you not a Dan Brown fan is what I want to know.
I have read all Dan Brown
books. Okay.
And I'm not saying they're good, but they're readable.
Okay.
And then like there's another one, Paris Vendetta, same idea. Like God knows what's going on. And they'll find some lost tomb of some pharaoh or the secret gold of the Confederacy or where Rommel dumped his gold into the ocean near Corsica. Actually, I think that might actually be what the Paris Vendetta is about.
So how many of these are there? Are there enough to keep you going for a while?
There's, I think, somewhere between like 12 and 15 of them. And I've only read like about five of them so far. And I'm like going, I wonder what else they're going to discover. I read there was one about the Templars.
Of course.
They find the secret Templar gold. And
it's not really complete unless the Templars are in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he's going through basically every conspiracy theory that you can find. So good on him. So. That's the books I'm reading right now. I'm going through the Steve Barry collection.
Dale?
I read a crap ton of books because Vancouver Public Library, thank you very much. Sound Reporting, which is NPR guy, writes about the NPR process. It's almost the textbook.
How to develop the NPR voice?
Their whole like news.
You know what I'm talking about.
Reporting thing. Yes,
I do know.
There's some. You will get me off on a digression, which is why I'm not really
not biting.
There's been so many interesting discussions on the NPR voice.
Yes, I'm aware.
It's not quite a textbook. It has some really good information in it, but I didn't really like the presentation, and it would make a horrible reference. Just. For anyone that might be interested in that kind of thing. The rest is all fiction. So, The Faded Skies, which is the second book in that Lady Astronaut series. It follows The Calculating Star by Mary Robinette Kowal. It's the alternate history where we went to Mars. And
I think you talked about this on the last...
Yeah, I just finished The Calculating Stars the last time. So in this book... the main character, who is a mathematics calculations person, who they call calculators in the actual space program, the calculators go into space because they don't have computers. So women in space. And it's got a lot of characteristics of The Martian, where they're like doing science as they go, and she gets really into the science. So it was equally as good read, but it's like a kind of a different story from the first novel.
That's actually kind of brilliant, because the original moon landing and like all that, like so much of it, like computers were unreliable or untenable. If you were
mechanical
doing a stop and then another stop, you'd have to have someone who could crunch the numbers. That's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, she did a whole... So, you weren't here when I talked about the first book. In the first book, there's been a almost extinction-level event, which means that they want to go into space.
Okay.
And so, of necessity, and it's right after World War II, so it's set in the 50s, women get involved in the space program.
Nice.
And it's highly based on facts. She's talked to like astronauts and physicists, and the details in there, some of the messy details, there is a plumbing story in this
book.
Good. there Yay. Is honestly like Plumbing in Space. She goes into all the messy details.
It's so, a trade that you can escape.
It's Woo! Very true. So highly recommended. The first novel won the Hugo Award. I read The Magicians by Lev Grossman. It was a good read. If you've seen the show, actually the show is really close to the spirit of the book.
Oh, so, okay.
You probably don't read the book, don't need to read the book unless you're interested. And yeah, enough said on that. It was a little bit disconcerting that the character in the book is named Janet, not Margot. And I did some reading afterwards because I was interested in some of the adaptation kinds of things. And Grossman was actually fine with that. He's like, yeah, actually, you know, I kind of like Margot better. But it actually, one of the interesting things was the storytellers for whoever the showrunner or whatever for the series, I think they actually did a better job bringing everything to life, which is interesting. Blood of Elves, which is the novel that the Witcher games are based on.
Oh, yeah, okay. Leading up to the television series that's going to rock our world in a couple of weeks.
Which is actually one of the things that got me interested in reading the book.
All I know is video games.
By a Polish author back, I forget now, but I want to say it wasn't maybe the 30s, but anyway, definitely pre-2000. His name is Sapkowski, I think.
Okay, so Andrzej Sapkowski. A whole new way. I now have this. Now I have a better understanding of why who's producing the show is producing the show.
Okay.
The Polish connection.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about the book actually is, I mean, it's still very much a Western kind of perspective, but it does read differently than a lot of the North American fantasies that I've read, and I like that. I think some of the joy of the novel was taken out of knowing some of the storyline from the games, but all the characters are there and all of that. So that was kind of a fun read. And all these series. The third series that I started, which I hadn't read, Killing Floor by Lee Child. This is the first of the Jack Reacher novels.
Mm-hmm.
And
my dad loves these.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, it really, it is what it is. Like Jack Reacher is this big guy that is kind of a bit of a law unto himself.
Yep.
And he does kind of some reprehensible things, but you're okay with it because they're bad guys. So one of those moral kind of plays that always breaks my brain a little bit. And I have to say, it's like I enjoyed the Tom Cruise movies, but having read about who Jack Reacher really is, like he's this big imposing guy. Yep. Like think Ron Perlman or Dwayne Johnson.
Yep.
Big.
Yeah.
And it is an integral part of the story. Like that this guy is just this huge guy who really does not have to worry about physicality stuff. And you just can't do that with any actor that isn't Ron Perlman or Dwayne Johnson. So I'd really like to see a movie with that kind of actor in it. And that's it for books.
John Cena.
Cena. Yeah, no, any.
He needs a wall unto himself.
Pretty much.
Yeah. No Tom Cruise.
In the Reacher character, Lee Childs wasn't super big on characterization. Maybe it was because it was in the first person, the whole first book. But I mean, I got some sense of character. I did not get a strong sense of what actor, like no actor, I guess that's what I'm saying. It's no actor came to mind as I was reading this, but I would, like I say, like love to see this played by big guy.
Yeah. I have no books. Podcasts.
Oh, podcasts. I have three. I don't know if I've talked about any of these before, but I don't care. Follow Civilizations podcast, where every episode they go into a different society that basic, like the Romans and the Scythians, the Mongols. Like, so far, there's only, I think, either six or eight. It might be like done for this season, but like it's really quality podcast. And I'm a history nerd, so I loved listening to it. Another one is called Secret Cabinet. There is a Dutch or a German podcast, basically called The Secret Cabinet in Germany. And this guy has translated it. And it, much like Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosity kind of thing, it's just weird little tidbits of history. And you're like, I just like knowing all this stuff.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite podcasts ever, Extremities, season two. The first season was about Pitcairn Islands. Season two is about Svalbard. And again, they're quick little, I think they're
using Norse?
Svalbard. Yeah, it's a Norwegian, most northern town in the world.
Right.
It's where the World Seed Bank is. And
that's why I heard it, yeah.
It's an interesting place because like Norway technically owns it, but it is a weird place where anyone in the world who wants to come there, fine. It's like an open border. Like if you can come here and survive, great, no problem. The laws are technically Norwegian, but like there's whole towns that are like Russian and things like that. If a country wants to come in and basically set up mining, fine. Like the governor.
It's so remote and so difficult.
It was sort of like, even though they, like after World War II, they awarded it to Norway as technically in charge of it because it is such an important area. Like if a country came in and tried to lay claim to it, they basically occupy a section of like the North Arctic that basically gives them supremacy over a lot of areas. So no, Russia, you can't claim it. No, that like the world has said, fine, Norway's in charge, but anyone who wants to land there can. Point blank, if you want the minerals, great, you do it. Fine. Just here, like Norway, the governor is... The governor of Svalbard has a unique position. His only rule is basically to enforce a few environmental laws and some other things. Like he is the only governor on the planet that his job is unique compared to every other governor on the planet. It's like, if you want to be from Portugal, sure. There's a lot of land. Just pick an area, have your Portuguese town. Don't care. So it's good. Svalbard. So Extremities, season two. It's pretty good. I recommend it. And I just want to say, this is the 40th anniversary of The Littlest Hobo, 70s and 80s version. So it's pretty cool. It's probably like the 56th anniversary of the 60s version, but let's face it, we're all products of The Littlest Hobo 70s and 80s. So yeah, that's it for me.
Dale?
Well, we both have a podcast this month.
Yes, we share.
So I'm going to let you lead with this one.
Okay, what is it actually? Oh, it's America. No, Dolly Parton's America. Yes. Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yes. Amazing.
It is. It is really, really charming.
It's Dolly freaking Parton. Of course it's charming.
I can't say enough about the first ever. Well, as we record, there's only one episode out.
Yes.
I can't say enough good things about it because the guy and his producer, they approach the subject with like an open curiosity and they're really clear about what their thoughts are as they're doing these interviews. And they got, listen to the podcast, they got this almost unprecedented access. Well, maybe not unprecedented, but they got this really great access to Dolly Parton to ask her questions multiple times.
Yeah.
And I just love the whole sensibility and the whole approach.
Well, I mean, I think we need to be clear. I mean, Dolly Parton has never been somebody that shies away from the media. Like she is an open book. You know, you can ask her whatever you want. If you can get her to talk, like if you can get in a room with her, she's more than happy to share stories. Like there's very few things that, I mean, over the decades that she's been a celebrity that have been kind of taboo or that she won't talk about. And that's the only thing is really like any drama about her husband. Just don't be poking around about, you know, any drama or whatever. If you want like dish dirt on, you know, her marriage, that's the only thing she has never really talked about.
So you're coming from a more informed place than I. This is all new. Well, not all new, but this is mostly new.
But I mean, she's always been one of the reasons that I've always found her super charming. Is not she? It's not just that she's an amazing artist, but she's always been one of these people that clearly speaks her mind, and she's really open about.
Well, and she's really articulate.
She is very articulate, and she was never afraid to kind of poke fun of herself, but she never did it in a way that was kind of like demeaning. Like one of the things that I find really interesting and that they get into quite a bit in the first episode is this idea that, you know, for a long time she was kind of always the butt of the joke because, you know, she was always a woman that was like big chested. She was always, you know, men always kind of looked at her as like Dolly Parton. You said Dolly Parton and everybody knew what you were talking about, yeah. Right? And she kind of always took the piss out of that. And if you were a woman that liked Dolly Parton, you always kind of appreciated the fact that she was, I mean, you can't hide her boobs. They're just there. So you know what? You fucking own them. Like, but I'm more than just my chest.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really appreciated that. And hearing them talk about, like, we saw Dolly Parton live a couple of years ago. And one of the things that was really apparent just from the show that we went to in, like, Vancouver, which is as multicultural as it gets, is she, like, people love her. Like, everybody loves Dolly Parton. Doesn't matter who you are, what walk of life you are, what color you are, what race you are, what your sexual preferences. If you want to dress up, great. Like, she is open to everybody. And like watching her she was as much of a musician as she did talk. And it was amazing. It was like everybody was just happy. Like, you walk out of there and you're just happy.
They talk about that in the first episode. Yeah. That was, I knew so many people loved her, but
I just subscribed.
Oh, what? Yeah.
You convinced me.
The first episode is called Sad Ass Songs.
Yes.
Which digs into some of her early, early stuff.
To be talking about, like, it blew me. Oh, gonna spoil it. We should. Never.
Just listen to the show.
Just listen to the show.
Good.
And so many things about history come up, which was interesting. The one moment for me that was a little bit singular because I'd never heard it done this way before is a person of faith talking about suicide.
Mm.
And I forget exactly how she said it, but she was so articulate,
mm-hmm.
absolutely so articulate about
where
she was at.
She is a songwriter. She's won numerous awards. She's written thousands of songs.
Yeah.
Like that, Willie Nelson.
Yep.
Most of them aren't under her name.
No, yeah. Exactly.
That still doesn't mean you do a good talking interview.
No, it's true.
That is true.
Anyway, yeah. So very highly recommended.
Yep. All the love for Dolly.
Dolly.
My other podcast is The World According to Sound is Back. This is, it's about a 3-minute hit. I'm not sure what their frequency is going to be, maybe once a week. And they play a sound and then they give you a bit of background on the sound.
Oh, yeah. And I've actually listened to the show on a number of occasions.
It was crazy. Just as I was talking about it, they actually went dark.
Oh.
And they were looking for a sponsorship and because, you know, the time and stuff. They tried to do a Kickstarter, which didn't work. So it's based on their tagline for the new shows. They've got sponsorship actually from some Institute for the Blind.
Oh, cool.
Which is like a really cool thing.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's just like I say, it's really, they're all really short and the whole thing is really simple. They play an interesting sound. They give you a bit of a background on it.
Hmm.
I started listening to, I want to say it's called The Story Palace. I wish I would have written it down. I should have looked it up, but I can't remember. But the only reason I started listening to it is they did an episode on some other podcast that I listened to where they talked about how they actually put together the shows. And it's just this one guy that basically like tells an interesting story, and the shows are really short. They're like 10 or 12 minutes long. And there's like, I listened to that episode of, I can't remember what show it was on. It was on some podcast I listened to. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to give this a shot. And I really, really enjoy it. It's just a quick, the stories are always really interesting. He's a really great storyteller. He's got a great voice. I just really enjoy them. Loving Throughline, I think I've talked about it before, but that show is like top notch. So it's kind of like it is a history show where the episodes range from like 30 to 40 minutes. And they basically take something now and they kind of look at the history of it and how we got to where it is now and how the basically the past influences the present and the future. They just did a really interesting episode on Hong Kong, which I thought was really great, but definitely, definitely highly recommend Throughline. And then the last one, I had a last one. Oh, yeah, Royal Blood, which you recommended.
Yeah, I like that.
Which I'm really, really enjoying. The funny thing about Royal Blood is as soon as I started listening to it, she is doing a car commercial.
Yes.
And I was watching TV and this commercial came on and I thought, where the fuck do I know that voice
from? I had the exact same reaction.
And I it took me a week basically until I listened to the next episode and I'm like, God damn it, it's her. So that was
really good on her for getting work.
Exactly. It's a great show. I'm really enjoying it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's it.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's it?
Oh, I want to celebrate 30 years of Pretty Hate Machine.
30 years of what?
Pretty Hate Machine.
Pretty Hate... Oh, Nine Inch Nails.
Nine Inch Nails debut album. You know, it's funny because we listened to a lot of satellite radio and we went in the car and they were talking about the 2020 Inductee Hall of Fame list and they had the fan vote. And I'm like, why is Nine Inch Nails on the list? Oh, yeah. They have... Like, there's a requirement. Your first album had to come out 30 years ago, like you have to have 30 years of a body of work, consistent work. And I'm like, oh, so it's the first year they become eligible. So let's put them on a list.
Excellent.
And that album changed my life when I listened to it like 6 or 7 years later. It really, really did. It fueled my goth phase, fueled my love of music. I became completely obsessed with Trent Reznor, still am. So, hey, there's that.
First time I heard Joy Division.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, ding, ding, ding. All of a sudden, I dropped pretty much all metal. I stopped listening to metal entirely, going, is there more shit that sounds even vaguely like this?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, have you thought of the Talking Heads? Let's listen to the Talking Heads. Have you thought about Elvis Costello? Yes, I have thought of Elvis. Yeah. So,
anything else you guys want to discuss before we...
No, I think I'm kind of drained.
Okay, well, come on by atcpod.ca. We will link to everything. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks with the December preview. So until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.
Baby, when I met you, there was peace on me. I set out to get you with a fine-tooth comb. I was soft inside. There was something going on. You do something to me that I can't explain. Hold me closer and I feel no pain. Every beat of my heart, we got something going on.